This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line, plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for limited time and subject to change, max one offer per account.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This is Issues 2018. I'm Steve McIntosh, and our guest is Eric Kale, Director of Wichita Sedgwick County Historical Museum. Welcome to the Issues 2018.
Thank you, Steve.
For anyone unfamiliar with Wichita, you might explain, where is the museum located?
Well, the historical museum's located downtown. It is very near Century 2. It's not hard to spot. It's an old 19th century city hall building, and we've got a 170-foot clock tower on top of us, so it really sets us apart.
That's a historic building. It's been there for a long time.
That's correct. It took them a couple years to build it, and they opened it in 1892, and it served the city hall until about 1975.
I was going to say, my wife, when we were young couple, she actually had a job there when it was city hall.
Oh, yes. Yes, we have a lot of city employees coming through to look at it through the years, and they don't recognize it now since it's a museum.
Right across the alley, if I remember, was a police department where there's now, I believe, a parking garage there.
Right. In 1908, they built a actually, it was originally a fire department, and then in the 30s, they changed it over into the police station. And when we took over the building in the mid-70s, that was demolished, and it's the site of Heritage Square.
Oh, yeah.
The little park pocket there. Park.
Hey, listen, and it was in the, I'm going to say, the early 80s that lightning struck the clock tower.
Yeah.
Were you there at that time? Because I actually went down and covered that story for KFH.
Well, I actually, at that point, was working as a volunteer. And, yes, it was 1981.
81.
We had just opened the museum. And at that location, and the clock tower was struck by lightning.
It looked like a great big match or something, a big torch up there.
Well, thank you to the fire department. They were there in minutes and had that out before it burned into the building.
All right, so we've survived. Where was the museum before it moved in there, Eric?
Well, we were located on East Douglas in what was the Beachy family home. They owned the Steffens Dairy, and they'd left their home. It was really a mansion of that time to the museum for a location. So we moved out of the old Forum Building, which was where Century 2 is today. It served as kind of the convention center. We moved the original museum from that location to that home, and that's in College Hill. Kirstie Alley owns that house now.
All right. How long have you been director, Eric?
Well, I replaced Bob Puckett in 2007.
And what were you doing before that?
Well, I have a degree in education, and I had been in teaching. And prior to that, I had worked in other nonprofits.
Were you a history teacher?
No, actually, not history. I was in visual arts.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hey, how many people actually visit the museum in a year?
Oh, well, we typically see about 17,000 walk through our doors each year. And, of course, we serve many more long distance through the internet and so forth.
And where do they come from, the people who actually come to the museum?
Most of our visitors are local, but we always attract people from out of town. So they come to the museum to kind of get oriented to Wichita and the community. We a lot of overseas visitors. And then a lot of our locals that come and see us had no idea that that museum existed, and we hear that every day.
Now, how is the museum funded? How are the bills paid?
Well, we're celebrating our 80th year next year, and so there's been a three generations of love for local history and a lot of support through the years. So we have an endowment that we work on to help sustain the museum. We also have a membership of about 700 that support us financially every year, and a host of other benefactors and the city and the county, which have long supported the museum. They've invested in the museum for generations as well. In fact, the museum really had its start in the old county courthouse over 100 years ago.
And that would be the one on Main, but it's the older building across the street from where the courthouse is now.
Huh? Yeah.
That's where the election commissioner's office is.
Yes, right. And the tag department was there last I checked. And it's a great building. It was built in 1888, I believe.
Let's talk a little bit about what visitors can see at the museum. Do you have any special exhibit or exhibits this summer that are going on?
Yeah. We have all four floors with exhibits, and we'll have two dozen different exhibits at any one time, but we keep them, some of them changing. We have one right now that is a traveling exhibit all about a very early photojournalist who came to Wichita from New York City in the early part of the 20th century and really raised our awareness on poverty and the struggles of, the title of the exhibit is Jacob Riis, How the Other Half Lives, and it's a really well-done exhibit through the NEA. So we're the second stop on a three-year tour.
What kind of photos are these? They're black and white, obviously, right?
Yeah, and a lot of folks will recognize these because they're iconic. They've been shown in lots of different formats, but these are taken in New York City. They had just invented flash photography at the end of the 19th century, and so he was a journalist, but he started taking pictures to illustrate and augment his stories.
Right.
So. They're really relevant today.
What time frame would that have been? Right after the first turn of the century, or in the 20s?
1880s, 1890s.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and he actually died in 1914. So these are all well over 100 years old.
Yeah, that could be very interesting, I would think.
Yeah, audiences young and old have really been moved by it.
And do you get many traveling exhibits like that?
Well, there aren't too many traveling exhibits that really relate to our local Sedgwick County history, but we do find them. And we've managed to find one every year or so that we've brought in. We also create our own. This fall we have one called Toys of the Future, which is mid-century, you'll recognize these toys are the space toys, the ray guns, the flying saucers, the Buck Rogers rocket ships, all produced out of tin, very colorful. And that's our fall exhibit.
Can you tell us about one or two good exhibits you've had over the past couple of years that you really were impressed with?
Oh, yeah. As far as the traveling exhibits, we had one that was really interesting called Spirited, which looked at the Prohibition years. And, of course, Kansas has sort of a edge on Prohibition. We outlawed liquor pretty widely for about three generations. They almost wrote it into the state constitution in the 1860s.
Thanks to Carrie Nation, I think.
Yeah, she was a big temperance.
She did that right here. in Wichita.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm, you know, growing up in West Wichita, I heard people, the old timers now and then, say, yeah, that's old so-and-so. He was a bootlegger. Apparently, that went on quite a bit around here at one time.
Yeah, we were pioneer bootleggers.
Well, something to be proud of.
I don't know, but it's a fact. We had a jump start on bootlegging here in Kansas because they had to do it, you know, all the through the years.
I want to take us. We're going to go for a little tour here. You know, if you can visualize this, and I'm going to have Eric take us through floor by floor. I want to start off on the first floor. What can folks see on the first floor generally when they go in?
Yeah, on the first floor we have exhibits. We have our Windows on Collection exhibits that you see when you walk in the doors. There are things we've recently added to the collection. We have a stellar collection of cut glass that gets people in from all over the country to see that. We have a museum gift shop that's staffed by volunteers, and it's one of the major retail outlets in downtown Wichita and a great place for souvenirs. Then we also have the Davis Gallery, the Courtney and Marcellette Davis Gallery, which is really fun. It's sort of an orientation gallery. Our young historians create exhibits in this particular location. And we also have a functional 1948 telephone booth. You can make a call for a dime and use a dial phone, or you can type a letter on our typewriter and mail that. We have a
That's Underwood interesting. This was my next observation because, as you know, a couple of years ago, I brought my grandchildren down there. I think three or four of them. They were pretty young, and they were fascinated by the telephone booth. Can you actually make a call there, or just go through the motions?
It's fully functional.
It's got a landline?
Well, it's an interesting story. It's not easy to put in a phone booth, especially one from 1948. We discovered how difficult it was, but we found someone in New York State who specializes in restoring telephones, especially payphones, and so we ordered up a restored model from him, and it actually functions. You put a dime in it, you hear the bells, and then you dial the number.
So. Yeah, it's going to take folks back. And of course, again, there's a rotary dial was pretty fascinating to the kids too.
Well, yeah, we'll flip them a dime and challenge them to take the payphone challenge.
So. Yeah, it's amazing how far we've come as far as technology is concerned. And this is something where I think it's good for the kids to see this. Also, the other thing that again that fascinated was the manual typewriter. They had never seen one of those before.
Yeah, you don't encounter those
And I
like
actually have
to.
One. I have one about that, and a really old one at home that's somewhere in a closet someplace. I've hung on to it. Maybe it's worth some money. I'll come down and sell it to you.
There's still a whole kind of subculture into typewriters, and you can get ribbons and everything.
Really? You can get ribbons?
Yeah, there you can keep one going if you
talk
like.
Talk to the kids about changing a typewriter ribbon. Oh, boy.
We're looking for a typewriter repair person, by the way.
Really?
I'll just put that out there.
You don't have an old-style news teletype machine down there, do you? That would be fun.
No, but the typewriter we have down there is an old Western Union. It
so
types
you can't,
all caps.
You have a key. Okay. All right. You're listening to Issues 2018 on the Intercom radio stations, and our guest is Eric Kale, director of Wichita Sedgwick County Historical Museum. And some of the conversation over the past 3 minutes has probably lost anybody under the age of about, 40? They have no idea what we're talking about. But that's why they need to come to the museum and further their education about this stuff, right?
Yeah.
Give us a look at what's on the second floor, Eric.
Well, up on the second floor is we have an exhibit that changes frequently. Right now we have artifacts from the museum's collection, and we still actively collect. We have over 100,000 artifacts in the permanent collection. We collect things that we can use to tell the story, the local stories with. So they're many of them very unique, and they tell interesting stories that really illustrate our local history.
Can you tell me one or two then? Is the Jones auto up there?
That's actually, we've got the car on the fourth floor.
I want to know how you did that.
Well, there's a video up there that is taken from old news, television news footage that depicts that. So I won't give away the story. You'll need to come and watch that video.
But just as for folks who know, the Jones Auto Company, we manufactured cars in Wichita, did we not?
Yeah, thousands of cars and trucks were manufactured here about 100 years ago during the kind of the World War I era.
Now, let's go back down to the second floor. What else? One or two other things you can see there that are local?
Well, we have a turn-of-the-century drugstore recreated. It's an immersive sort of environmental exhibit that you can walk into and really see what these little neighborhood institutions look like. There are really none left today like that, at least here in Wichita. And this one is very accurately recreated. It was actually removed from Sevre, Kansas, far from here.
Yeah. So now would it have a soda fountain type thing there?
Yeah, there's a soda fountain and the pharmaceutical trappings. And we have a 1927 Seberg jukebox in that setting. And it'll take you back. Now, kids, see, it's a good intergenerational experience. Grandparents can go with kids, and for once... the grandparents can tell the kids how things worked instead of the kids helping us with their cell phones.
It usually works the other way around.
Yeah.
Let's go up a flight. Let's go up to the third floor. By the way, you have an elevator there. We self-operator, right? We can operate it.
Yes.
But what I'm going to tell you real quickly, back in the early 70s when I would go down to City Hall, they had somebody who was a full-time elevator operator there.
Oh, yes.
She had a little glove on, and that's all she did all day long. There is something. Maybe you could hire me to come down and be your elevator operator.
Well, we'll do that during special events. I'll get you a stool in there. It's a big elevator.
Yeah.
So,
tell us about the third floor, Eric.
The third floor is a very interesting floor. We kind of think of it as the 19th century floor, and that's where we pick up the story of local history. We don't go back before settlement, so our story starts right about the time of the conclusion of the Civil War, when they opened up this area. On that floor, we tell sort of the city's origin story in Wichita, the Magic City. It's a chronological trip through the first 50 years. Then we also have restored recently the original room which housed the mayor's office. And then we have it in its 1890s appearance. We've used a photograph and a lot of research to put that exactly like it was in 1890. We also have a Victorian cottage, which is a seven-room Victorian cottage recreated up on the third floor.
You got all that on the third floor.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. The kitchen bathroom, which was unusual in the 1890s to have an indoor bathroom. It'll transport you to that time.
Now, take me up to the fourth floor again. You've got the car up there.
Yeah, the fourth
floor. You've got a train locomotive or anything like that?
No, you'll have to go to Topeka for that one. But we have, or the Transportation Museum, which is our neighbor downtown. They have theirs outside. Kansas Historical Museum in Topeka has one inside, a little older. But on the fourth floor, we also have the special exhibit area. We have Jacob Riis up right now through August 11th. And then we have also the Spirit of Wichita exhibit, which looks at Wichita in the 20th century, the emergence of aviation, oil and gas industry, the WPA years with the Depression and the Dust Bowl. And we also look at the emergence of the electrical technology. We have the distinction of having given birth, really, in public performance to the electric guitar in 1932. And we have the earliest example of a electric guitar up there.
So. Oh, yeah, I remember seeing that when we were down there.
Yeah.
Electric guitar.
Yeah, that's sort of something you wouldn't have factored in. You think aviation and going back further, the frontier years. But, yeah, electric guitar as well.
How have you been able to find artifacts that are unique to the Wichita area?
Well, we've had a museum staff that's been doing that for 80 years, so it's an ongoing project, but it's very serendipitous how that occurs. People will come to us with something that they think is unique or interesting that tells a local story, and most of the objects we've received have been donated. We occasionally find funds to purchase things as well, but we have an amazing collection. For as long as we've been collecting, we have artifacts that were owned by the early pioneers. And
do you get many offers?
Every day.
Really? And of course, some of them are just, frankly, junk almost, I bet.
Well, yeah, some have almost no intrinsic value or collector's value, yet they're just really important to our local story.
Yeah.
You could never get a nickel for them. Other things that we have are, as it turns out, immensely valuable, but we don't think in terms of market value in dollars for these
right.
things. We treat everything to preserve it for the future generation so we can continue to tell the story.
Tell us about any regular programs and activities. Do you do a lot of educational work with kids and things like that?
Yeah, we really make an effort. We try to get kids through the museum as many as we can. We have funders that make this essentially free for school tours. And sometimes we even have transportation money to help. It's really important to get kids through it. They gain a knowledge and respect for their community, and it really kind of enculturates people. It gets them involved and engaged in and having a degree of respect for their community. That's really great to see with kids.
Do you have a peak season for attendance? Is it a time when you got more than other times?
Every time of year is a little different.
And you know, you do something at Christmas, right?
Yes. We have programs throughout the year. We have today is our Senior Wednesday. Every third Wednesday, we have a program for seniors 10 months out of the year. And then we also have programs related to all of our exhibits. The Jacob Riis exhibit has several. We list these on our website. Which is wichitahistory.org.
Do you get a lot of help from volunteers, Eric?
Yes, a volunteer base is extremely important to us. We have a 25-member board of trustees that are all local volunteers. We have a friends group, which is called WIMS, which is about 60 volunteers that put on fundraising events and staff our gift shop and help in a lot of different ways.
Tell me why, tell our listeners why local history in general, but local history is important to them.
Well, you know, you have to understand where you've been to know where you're going, and to have a little perspective, you know, you learn from the past in so many ways. And that's what we do as really an educational institution, is to try to teach the lessons of the past to people. It's also very amusing. A lot of people will refer to it as edutainment. So it's sort of education and entertainment coming together when you visit a museum.
Is there anything new in the planning stages for you? You got anything exciting going on? Or maybe you don't want to tell me. Maybe I keep it secret. But
oh, well, we're always planning exhibits. It usually takes a couple years to put the exhibit schedule together. So we're always looking a couple years out. And, you know, one thing that's looming large is the Sedgwick County and Wichita Sesquicentennial, which is the 150th anniversary of the establishment of our community. They happened both in 1870, so obviously we're talking 2020 is a big year for that.
Oh, 2020.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Coming right up.
So that will be, what do you call it? The Sesquicentennial.
Yes, try to say this. I had to practice.
You bet.
Sesquicentennial.
Sesquicentennial.
Yeah.
That is a mouthful.
Kansas celebrated the Sesquicentennial for the state in 2011, but we don't get to do that until 2020.
Okay, what's the biggest challenge for being in your job every day, Eric?
Well, it is a challenge because really history museums are the least popular. I'm sorry to say they shouldn't be, but least popular cultural arts institutions anywhere.
I don't get that.
Well, people, of course, we love the zoo. We love visiting Exploration Place, the art museums, both the Wichita Art Museum and the Ulrich Museum, the Kansas Aviation Museum. There are a lot – the Museum of World Treasures. There are a lot of museums like that out there that really are in the limelight. But when it comes to the Wichita Sedgwick County Historical Museum, just getting the word out is – and we so appreciate you having the exposure for us.
I was going to say, maybe this will help today because I find it very interesting. I got to get my grandkids to go back down there and see you so they can take a dime and operate that payphone down there. Hey, our guest is Eric Kale, Director, Wichita Sedgwick County Historical Museum. Eric, thanks for being with us. That's all for this edition of 2018. We'll be back next week. Thank you for listening. I'm Steve McIntosh.
Podcasting isn't just evolving. It's having a full-blown identity crisis. I'm Allison Marino, host of What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined, a new series that pulls back the curtain on the forces shaping the medium now and what that means for all of us who love podcasts. I'm really excited to share the official trailer where you'll hear from some of the biggest names in the space. Ira Glass, Leo Laporte, Guy Raz, Hernan Lopez, Lex Friedman, AJ Feliciano, Dan Granger, and yeah, me too. Here it is now.
I still want to kill the word podcast.
That's not just a hot take. It's a symptom of an identity crisis.
Big company run media, and people are trusting it less and less. It's really important that we're independent.
There's a handful of companies that control the vast majority of podcast inventory that have the vast majority of the gigantic shows.
We left radio behind for a reason. We wanted to get away from all the gatekeepers.
I don't know that you could do this as effectively in video.
Podcasting is at a crossroads. I've watched the industry swing from hype to consolidation to reinvention. But this time it's different. From the producers of the documentary Age of Audio, Oxford Road presents the Media Roundtable special series. What's a podcast? The Revolution Redefined.
All of us who work in the media, like, yeah, we got to run a business and like, we got to make a living and we got to sell our ads and we got to do all that. But we all got into it because like, I think most of us, like, it just gave us a feeling.
A three-part series where you'll hear the leading industry voices give their takes on what podcasting has become and where it's headed next. Teaming up with Oxford Road and Age of Audio director Sean Colon for this series was fun, but also kind of a wake-up call. If you love this medium as much as I do, you've got to listen to What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined. It's out now, wherever you get your podcasts.